10 past 9 now. Jill Emberson with you this morning, thinking now about the jobs that our children and our grandchildren might have in the future, and kind of therefore a way of thinking about the areas of study that might be appropriate for them against the backdrop of Toyota closing down and bringing an end to any car manufacturing in Australia. There'll be ramifications of that, I'm sure, for years. Certain parts of the mining industry starting to slow. There'll be ramifications there. So where will the jobs be in the future for our kids? Maurice Mizalowski is a business futurist who's with me now, who's been giving some thought to this. Maurice, how are you?
I'm excellent.
Well, look, you know, jobs change, don't they, over time? The kind of jobs that are there and blossoming at any particular time in one decade will never be the same as they were, you know, in future generations. But looking into the future, I don't know, I find it harder to guess where the work is than I ever have.
Well, you're absolutely right, because there are whole new industries that we've never had, obviously, but never even thought about, because we have this new space which is digital. Not only the physical that you and I have lived in forever as human beings, but now this whole new plethora. But this dilemma that we have has been one we've had since mankind was put on Earth. The car industry, as we know it, is really only about 100 years old. 100 years ago, nobody thought about working in the car industry or working on a production line or being an engineer in the way that we know it now. That doesn't make it easier with what we're going through today. There's absolutely nothing that can be said or done about what we're going through now. It's structural change, it's horrible. I don't wish it on anybody, but it's part of human nature.
It's part of human nature that our needs change and that our economies change, everything changes. So it does seem, though, I must say, to that very point, if that's part of human nature, it's a structural change. It surprises me that big brains that are paid to run the country can't foresee these things.
Well, they can, but often I find the big brains you talk about, the politics, those sorts of things, are very anachronistic. They look backwards. They're very big vehicles. They're hard to change in a short space of time. Much of what they talk about and think about is what they've known. And again, as a human being, I have nothing against that. We can only think about what we know. But I find them to be very myopic. They just don't get what tomorrow's workspace will be. And they don't understand how important it is often for us to be in that thinking early.
Yeah.
A career 100 years ago gave us a while to tool up for it. You know, when car manufacturing came on, we had a couple of years to think about it, to get people ready, to build machinery, to do all those things. You and I have seen industries and careers come and go in the space of a couple of years now.
Absolutely, and it's kind of shocking it's shocking at first, and you kind of want to put your head in the sand sometimes. sometimes I do, but you can't. And of course, we need to keep working, and we need to keep working longer, which is why you think and say in some of the stuff that you've written that we will have 6 careers in a lifetime.
Yeah, 6 careers and 13 jobs, and that's not me saying it. I quoted from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, who says that. What we're talking about is a very, very different workspace. I'm on the cusp of a baby boomer. When I grew up and went through school, I was made a promise, finish whatever level of education you wanted, go into a career, a vocation, a trade, have that vocation, trade or career see you through, most probably for one, maybe two employers for your life. They'll hand you over to the government for a pension, and then your family will have you back for 10 years. And that was pretty much the way we saw life.
Oh, how ancient history is that now, Maurice?
But it's only going back 20 or 30 years.
Yeah,
that
okay,
was normal
good point.
For it. And nowadays, if somebody doesn't change jobs every 2 or 3 years, we think something's wrong with them. Employers, as much as they want to, don't keep people on for 30 or 40 years. Again, none of this is good or bad. It just is the evolution of time, which doesn't make it easier. But when we have kids that are starting grade 1 today, they won't be finished their education till 2025. If they go on to higher education, they won't be in the workforce till nearly 2030. We need to start doing things differently today to get them ready for that kind of time and that kind of space.
And the fact that we are now introducing computers to their education from a very early age would suggest that they're certainly the means of their literacy is starting to adjust to a potential future of employment in one form or another. But let's, in light of that, have a little look at where some of the work might be as we we look ahead, I don't know, 20 years, can we do that more?
Yeah, absolutely we can. So firstly, let's not lose sight of the fact that many of the jobs we're doing now will still be around. The Department of Education, Employment and Workplace Relations tells us that healthcare and assisted healthcare will rise 13.3% in employment over the next 3 or 4 years, and that's absolutely right. Baby boomers, all of us are going to live far longer, live healthier, wellness, anything around health, wellness is going to be a career well into the future, 5, 10, 15, 20 years on.
Okay, so, yeah, that's a given. If the health is your thing, then there'll be work.
Absolutely. Strangely enough, retail is, I think, also going to be around forever. The way that we retail, the way we shop, you know, all those things have obviously changed. But, again, human nature is that we want to exchange something we have for something else that somebody else has. So retail, in the broader sense, is also going to be a worthwhile career. Construction, we're still going to have to live in places, have homes, have dwellings, have buildings to work and to exercise and to do other things in. All of those things, we shouldn't give up the ghost. They're all still going to be around. They always have.
That might just be in slightly different forms, perhaps?
Oh, they absolutely will be in different forms. But again, thinking back, we've always evolved. You know, buildings, we're talking about 3D printing of buildings in the next 20 years or so. It'll be a completely different building format for some of the activity, but again, it will still need great hands, great minds, great people in that industry to make it true. So let's not give up the ghost on lots of industries that we have, but let's look forward to some other ones that might be around that aren't even beginning to be thought about today.
And where might that sort of untapped, but probably more than likely, rich area of work be?
A lot of them, no surprise, are around a technology aspect. They have something about technology that drives them. One of the careers that's really big at the moment and will be for the next 10, 20 years is called a data scientist. She or he, at the moment in America, can get a salary of about $80,000 plus. There's no qualification yet for it, but yet it's one of the most in-demand career titles.
What exactly is a data scientist?
It's a person who knows that there's lots of stuff online, because you and I are always pumping information online, and knows how to get it from that online and make sense out of it. So it can bring it back as really rich, what's called big data, rich big data. In other words, it becomes useful and purposeful to an employer, to a company, to an insurer, to a banker, to somebody else. That's what a data scientist does. And one of the big growth careers, one of the ones I love throwing at parents when I do parent groups, is that most parents would say that they don't want their children to have anything to do with gaming. Nothing at all. You know, it's a recreation, they need to get out. A gamer now, somebody that can develop games or be involved in that space, now can easily command $100,000 plus, and it's a career moving forward for the next 10 or 20 years, not just in playing games for children. But there's a scientific business side to it called gamification, in which we play online games which are business-oriented, so it can teach people occupational health and safety. It can teach them how to look after themselves better. It's a whole big area that's far beyond just playing games, shooting up and doing other things. So
it's kind of educational, public education drive underneath that, where there's a big market.
Public, private, it's really what it is. It's putting people into a virtual space and getting them to try, getting them to expose themselves to an environment before they physically have to be there. That's gamification. So, and pilots have been training that way for the last 30 years, so it's nothing new.
Yeah, interesting. Maurice Mizalowski with me now, business futurist, looking at the potential areas of employment. Just seemed a timely conversation to have in the light of the fact that we're in a very shifting economy at the moment. And not only do we have to think about our young people, today's young people, but many of us have to think about working till longer and longer, till we're older and older. So, you know, where's the potential for retraining for future employment?
You're right. What we will see is that the kids of today will definitely live to 100, 120 years of age. They'll work until they're 80. So their careers will be very different. Most of them will not be working 9 to 5. They won't be working towards an end goal, so to speak. I think they'll be working more on a project or a task. And when you ask about retraining, to me, that's often where we're headed. There's a lot more opportunity now for us to be an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur, and more of us will be some of the time self-employed, some of the time employed by others.
What's an intrapreneur?
An intrapreneur is a new fancy title for somebody who does what an entrepreneur does within an organisation.
Wow!
So they come to the organisation with fresh eyes, you know, with a drive, with an enthusiasm, with an ability to look differently, to innovate. And it's part of everyone's job title, but this is somebody who's got it on steroids, whose whole role is to do that.
Are organisations actually, you know, creating positions for those entrepreneurs on the payroll?
The big corporations are and have. It's often not part of their job title, so you won't see it on a job card, but it's part of the job specification. So they're told that what they're there for is to be a stirrer, to be a thinker, to be a motivator, to look at things differently. And certainly the big corps, now the brands that come to mind, the Googles, the Apples and those sorts of things, all have these people in various guises, but becoming more and more ordinary. And also something that we can outsource so that you can get another person. For instance, I would consider myself to be one of those working with organisations. So when we talk about reskilling, for me, it's often a conversation of, yes, have a look at the linear path that your current skills might take you to, allied jobs, allied industries, but what's your core strength? What are you really good at? And can you offer that in a different way, in a different sense? Lots of online spaces will let you sell or advise people about your service or products. And we also have a global space now. You don't necessarily just need to sell into Newcastle or Sydney or Melbourne or Queensland. You can, with the reach of digital, sell all over the world. So it does require new thinking. It requires a different way of going about things. But there is a possibility of a landscape that's very different.
Fascinating stuff with you this morning, Morris, 22 after 9 on 1233 ABC Newcastle. Now, I'm old enough and shameless enough to admit that I did one of the first communications and journalism degrees at a university in Australia. They didn't literally exist before I went to uni. They subsequently became all the go, all the rage. Everyone wanted a comms degree. And I sometimes wonder whether, given that they are so popular, but that this landscape is changing as much as it is, whether they are, in your observation of the future business potential, whether those qualifications will still be relevant?
The qualifications will be relevant, but more importantly, the skill set will remain relevant. So what we're talking about is at the core, I think, is the ability to communicate. Again, human trait. We want to communicate. We want to be heard. We want to know what other people are doing. We want to get our message across clearly. A lot of the way we do that has come up for grabs in the last 10 years. When you did your qualification, as I think similar time to when I did mine, none of this landscape even existed. We couldn't even think about it, let alone begin to skill ourselves for it. So we're now talking in blogs, we're talking in social media, we're talking in all kinds of instant messaging chat rooms, but we're still talking. So the notion of qualifications is an interesting one, because I do believe in 10, 20 years we need to be in a place where qualifications are global. But what we do in Newcastle, Sydney, Melbourne or wherever else as a qualification will be recognised by somebody in Russia or in America or somewhere else, because we're working in that space. And the skill sets should be similar.
Okay, that's going to be interesting, because at the moment that's such a barrier for many people moving around the world, not having their qualifications recognised.
Absolutely has been. Some qualifications obviously will need to be upgraded or regionalised. That makes perfect sense to me. So maybe you'll have to do a little bit of a course to figure out how that particular area does something. But core skills should be core skills. We already have the baccalaureate, which allows VCEHSC students, year 12 students, to get a qualification that's recognised globally. We need to be pushing forward. I know the universities are talking about this, working on this. Some qualifications are already considered universal, but pushing more and more towards it, because we are that kind of a transparent, open, geographically no boundary type universe now.
I feel I could talk to you all morning about this, Morris. I just want to ask you about another area that has been pointed to, jobs that were the kind of burgeoning areas, medical tourism, ancestry travel and sustainable tourism. We all love travelling. We're lucky enough in Australia to be a rich country that enables us to travel. Do you want to share any of your reflections on those areas of travel?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're talking about there is this notion of hyper-personalisation, which means that we no longer have to go, in tourism sense, on big mass tours. They'll still be around, people will love them and go on them, but I can now pick a particular aspect that interests me, so a heritage one. I went back 2 years ago, for instance, to my ancestry and took a very special, it was just me and a guide, and spent 2 weeks. So that's what the ancestry talks about. More and more people want to be connected to their roots, want to figure out who they are, where they came from, and there's a whole burgeoning industry, not just a physical taking you somewhere, but everything that goes behind it with the finding out and the getting ready for and the logistics of. Medical tourism, again, is this notion that we are open to the world, we require some kind of medical intervention or wellness or some kind of physical change, and we shop around the world for cheaper, better, different, whatever it is, criteria that we're using. So certainly that's growing. Australia is looking at it very seriously. A lot of our hospitals, universities are building up for it. There are other places in the world that have already done it better. So we're going to see more and more of those. But again, that's part of this world that we live in now, where you and I are looking for a very specialist insight. We want something that's just about us, just suits us. And that's many, not just tourism, but many of the industries we're moving forward into are going to have that underlying, underpinning type of approach.
Always need somebody to look after our teeth.
I think so. I do think so. So we'll need our dentists, we'll need our doctors. What they're going to do though, and the way they're going to operate, will be extremely different.
Wow, I wonder. Can they do it with less pain? That's all I think about when I think of the dentist.
Well, the answer is yes.
Good.
Absolutely yes. So dentistry, medicine, all of those things are really up for grabs. Lots of exciting things happening there. Stem cells, 3D printing, regrowing of organs and all sorts of bits and pieces. So we will still have medical care as we have it now, but I think we'll be able to extend what we do, as we've always done with human medicine.
The joy of the future, the opportunities that it has for us, so hang on, there's a hell of a ride ahead. Is that what you reckon, Morris?
I absolutely do, and as always, we're human beings. We need to temper all of this excitement with good old common sense. Just because we can doesn't mean we should, but we might want to.
Lovely to have you in the Hunter this morning.
It's great to be here again.
27 after 9 on 12:33, Morris Mizalowski, business futurist. Do you give much thought to the sort of work areas, or whether it be jobs, be your kids? I'd love to know about it on 1333 1233. You can text me on 0487 99 1233. And here's a few kids reflecting on what they want to do when they grow up.
And I grew up on